हरि
ॐ
सहना भवतु सहनो भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
So continue with this, with Mimamsa, in other words, the interpretation, how to actually interpret the Vedas. Mimamsa is twofold, Purva Mimamsa, which analyzes the Vedic rituals, and Uttari Mimamsa, which analyzes the Upanishads. The prefixes Purva and Uttara refer to the former and latter portions of the Vedas, respectively. Without any prefix, the word Mimamsa is synonymous with Purva Mimamsa. Right, so generally if you're talking philosophy and you say according to Mimamsa, that means the Purva Mimamsa, or Jaimini. You know, just like when you say Shakta, then, when you say Tantra, generally that means Shakta. But Tantra simply means ritual. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. You know, so there's Sattvic Tantras, you know, Rajasic, Tamasic, all these different things. So there's Vaishnav Tantras, like we follow the... Gotamiya Tantra, like so much of our worship is according to that. But yeah, does that make sense? So in the same way, when you say Mimamsa, then that means Purva Mimamsa, when it's just general. But if you're discussing the books of Vedic knowledge, you say Mimamsa, that means all the six schools. Okay? But otherwise, if you refer to it as a particular school, then it means, you can just say Mimamsa, and that means Purva Mimamsa. Rather than Uttara Mimamsa, because then you'll say according to Vedanta, right? The Uttara Mimamsa is generally, we call it Vedanta, or according to Upanishad, right? Does that make sense? It's just terminology. For every Vedic branch of knowledge, there are three supporting types of literature: Sutra, Bhashya, and Vartika. Sutra refers to the aphoristic style of writing an original work. Since sutras are brief in nature, they are supported by bhashya, commentaries that explain the meaning of the original text in detail. The Vartika is a work which analyzes the original text and bhashya, explaining aspects of the subject matter which are not explicitly addressed, right? Like some particular, you know, little detail or something like that. So in other words, your sutra says everything. The Bhashya then expands on that to bring out the things and to establish it. The Vartika will give information that wasn't covered in the other two. Vartika is not meant to establish the point. It's to give further information. You know, it's kind of like a footnote or something. Does that make sense? It gives further information. The Bhashya is to establish it. You know, to support it, to expand it, to make it more understandable, yes.
So Vartika would be considered to be as like some sort of essence of the whole sutra, or...?
The sutra, not necessarily, because the sutra itself is essence. I would say the Vartika is going to give certain angles or perspectives that may not have been brought out in either one of them. Something to add to it and make a fuller understanding. Like that. I think there'll be some, there might be example here. I think we're going to go through, here it's going to go. It'll be explained here. Listed below are three verses which define sutra, bhashya, and vartika respectively. The sutra literature is a class by itself, right? Just like Purana is a class of literature. So sutra is a class of literature. At the time when committing things to memory was considered supremely important, this method suited admirably, right? Because everything was put into sutras. So what was the essence of the whole body of knowledge was put into sutras. You memorized that, you had the whole body of knowledge. In the Vayu and Skanda Puranas, we find the following definition of the word sutra. That which is brief, unambiguous, meaningful, non-contradicting, non-exaggerating, and free from any defect, grammatical or repetitive or both, is a sutra, according to those that are adept in sutra literature, quoted in Adi Lila 7.106 purport. Right. So, yeah, it means, in other words, there's nothing extra in the verse. There's not an extra syllable in it. So it won't have any grammatical defects in it, and that it just exactly says what you want to say. It's very clear. There's nothing clouded about it. It's very direct, right? If you're doing poetry, you can hide things or this. Sutra means it's very direct, like that. As we understand from this verse, main characteristics of a sutra are alpaksharam, containing a minimum number of letters. In other words, you won't use one more letter than you need to, right? It was said about Panini when he's writing his grammatical sutras, that if he could find a way to cut out one syllable from the sutra, he would be as happy as if his wife had just given birth to a son. Like that. You know, so therefore his sutras need very extensive bhashyas because they're so concise. Like that. While the same grammatical points are made by Jiva Goswami, and the sutra itself does exactly like this. It means it's completely clear and not non-contradictory, because to exaggerate means you have to say something beyond what it is. You know, so you say just exactly what it is. Right? So then you can understand what's going on from the sutra. So the bhashyas are very small. They're sometimes just because we may not be familiar with the concept, so it's for us. It's not actually to explain it, really, because they're already so clear. But for like Jaimin, I mean Panini, then he'll have so they say ak. Well, what's that? So then there's these huge commentaries to explain what ak is, you know, like that. Asandigdham, without doubt as regards the meaning, right? It's very straightforward. Saravat must contain the essence of the subject. Vishvato mukham, and yet reflect all aspects of the same. All right, it means it gives the essence, but at the same time as all the aspects in the subject matter are there, you know. So it's not that it just says the essence and you don't catch actually the fullness of the subject matter. It says the essence and you understand the fullness, right? But then you can build on it. So the bhashyas will build on that. The following explains a bhashya. The knowers of bhashya know bhashya to be that in which the meaning of sutras is explained with words in keeping with the sutra order. In addition, it explains the usage of its own words where necessary. Right, so you're going to expand on that sutra, keeping in line with exactly what it says. So you're trying to make it more clear and more relevant. And if need be, is the terminologies that you'll use in your commentaries, you have to explain them. So that's all right, you can do that in there. The sutra is just said, right? They won't necessarily explain themselves. Or you have another sutra that will explain that point. But the sutra itself doesn't explain itself. You know, it doesn't have to, because it's saying exactly what it means. Does that make sense? The following verse explains the Vartika. The experts in No Vartika define it as a work wherein there's an analysis of what was said, not said, and improperly said in any original work. Right. So in other words, you're bringing out, trying to bring again to the essence that you understand what's going on, bringing out anything or any aspects that were felt that were unspoken or, you know, may not be understood in the proper way or anything like that. Does that make sense? So between these three, then you get a clarity on what's going on. Okay, any questions on this? Yes.
So what would be then Bhagavatam as a nature of commentary?
Wait, because it says commentary, so that's a bhashya. So that's the natural expansion on that. It would be the, you know, clear, you know, clearly expanding and bringing it to, you know, a practical use like that. Well, this Vartika's analysis of what was said, why it was said like that, and stuff like that.
But Vedanta Sutra already has a Bhashya and Govinda Bhashya, doesn't it?
Yes, that's why it says it's the natural commentary.
Okay.
It doesn't say it's a direct commentary.
Oh.
Govinda Bhashya is the direct commentary. Bhagavatam's natural commentary, in other words, it works like this, is that Krishna spoke the Vedic literatures to Brahma. Brahma asked him, what's the essence? He gave him the four-verse Bhagavatam, the Chaturshloki Bhagavatam. That's the essence. You want to understand all the Vedic literatures, you understand these four verses and view everything in the Vedas through these four. Then you know that you have actually understood the Veda. Right? If it is a doubt what it means, you refer it through these four verses. Brahma gave those four verses to Narad, Narad gave them to Vyas. Right? So then Vyas expanded these four as the Bhagavatam. So Vedanta Sutra, so now then we have the Veda itself, then the essence of the Veda in the philosophy. You know, I mean, the essence of the Veda, you know, the philosophy, how you actually view the world and, you know, what's the position of the jiva, the material energy, the supreme and all that. That's given in the Upanishads. The essence of the Upanishads is the Vedanta Sutra. Right? So in other words, Vedanta Sutra, therefore, is the essence of the Veda. Is that okay? So both of them are the essence of the Veda. So the authority is the, you know, is these you have the Prasthan Traya. So you have this Vedanta Sutra then will be accepted as, you know, authority. So Bhagavatam is then explaining what does that mean. You know, the real meaning of the Vedanta Sutra. Like that. Is that okay? Because he'd already written Vedanta, he'd already written Bhagavata. So, you know, so he'd already gotten to the essence, so he wasn't satisfied. So with the Bhagavatam, then that real essence in connection with Krishna, you know, that devotional service, that was brought out. Because otherwise the other ones, the philosophy, it brings it out, but it doesn't necessarily drive it home how it should. Does that make sense?
Does with the mantras and poems work the same? Like for Bhagavatam, it's not a sutra, right?
No.
It's not considered sutra, so the commentary is not called Bhashya.
No, it can also be called Bhashya.
Oh,
main thing is you have the original work, because they're using this here because then they're going to, because Vedanta Sutra, you know, exemplifies this use of Panchanga Nyaya. So since it's a study of this, then before we get into the Vedanta, we're studying this aspect of what is a sutra, like that. But always you have the original work, that's the main thing. There's an original work, there's a commentary, then there's something that may analyze the original work and commentary. Like that.
And when Bodhi Vijayabhushan was debating with the Ramanandis, why is it that he did not just present Bhagavatam? Why did he?
Because they're looking for Vedanta Sutra. Because we already had Bhagavatam in commentaries, and so then if they would accept that line, then they would have already accepted it.
Okay.
But they didn't, because they're looking at it from, you know, if you don't have a commentary on, if you claim to be an Uttari Mimamsa and you don't have a commentary on Vedanta Sutra, or accept someone else's, so therefore you say they're in that line, then, you know, how do we accept you as authorized? So then Govinda Bhashya is there, is that the deity spoke it, he wrote it down. Okay, Sri Chaitanya's method of knowledge. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 15:15, by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, the purpose of studying the Vedas is to understand Him. Vedaischa saveraham eva vedyaha. In pursuance of this purpose, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained to Sanatana Goswami that there are only three topics dealt with in the Vedas: sambandha, relationship; abhideya, process; and prayojana, goal. Bhagavan Sambandha Bhakti Abhideya Hoy Prema Prayojana Vedetin Vastukai. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the central point of all relationships. Acting in devotional service to Him is one's real occupation. And the attainment of love of Godhead is the ultimate goal of life. These three subject matters are described in the Vedic literature. Madhyalila 6.178. So we can see here is when he says these are described, means that we could take it that these are just three topics that are described there, and there's so many topics. Or we can say that these are described in the Vedic literature means when the Vedic literature is describing things, this is what the Vedic literatures are describing. So we see the Acharya's emphasis so much on the Sambandha Abhideya and Prayojana then gives you more the idea is that actually everything can be brought back into these three. You know what I'm saying? Vedanta exemplifies this method. The Vedanta Sutra, which consists of aphorisms revealing the method of understanding Vedic knowledge, is the concise form of all Vedic knowledge. Adilila 7106 purport. Was this one? Was this one? This one was. Oh, it's the same purport. Okay. Okay. Revealing the method of understanding Vedic literature, not a method, but the method. In other words, Vedanta Sutra, because Vyasadeva compiles the Vedic literature, so he actually knows what's going on there. So he gives Vedanta Sutra so that people can understand that. These other schools technically aren't correct. You know, in other words, all these people have studied with Vyasadeva and they've come to their own conclusions. Because technically they're all disciples of Vyas, you know, but they've come up with their own ideas. The Uttaramimamsa addresses the ultimate end of a human being's life, the liberation from material bondage and devotional service in prema. It ascertains the purport of the Vedas to be the understanding one's relationship with Godhead. This knowledge is also known as Vedanta. Right? It means the end of, the end, Vedanta, the end of knowledge, the end of the Veda, you know, meaning, you know, the conclusion, like that. The Uttaramimamsa Sutras were composed by Bhadarayana, also known as Vedavyas. The Gaudiya Bhasya literature on the sutras was written by Baladev Vidyabhushan. There is also Vartika by the same author, known as Sukshma. So he means Vyasadeva has written the Vedanta Sutra, Govinda Bhasya is there by Baladev. Baladev also writes the Sukshma. That's then the Vartika that brings up little things or analyzes stuff. The Uttaramimamsa Sutras of Bhadarayana are classified in four principal sections, or adhyayas. And each part, again, is divided into four subsections, or pada. Padas consisting of a total of 555 sutras, right? Because this is our form of Vedanta Sutra we use. Everybody has all the same words, but there's a difference in the number of sutras because some will break the sutras in different places. Two sutras will be made into one, or one sutra will be made into two, or between three sutras will divide up one sutra and it'll end up as two sutras, you know, part of it will go with this, part of it will go with that, where they put commas, you know, so they'll do that so that they bring out the meaning that they're according to their, you know, their perspective, because you're trying to establish. If you want to establish Advait, then you do it this way. Dwait, you do it like this. Vishishta Dwait, Vishuddha Dwait. You know, Dwait Advait. So Achinta Veda Veda Tattva means then you have to understand the sutras in this order. So there's 555. Like that. I think Ramanuja has like 585 or something. So he's got 30 more. So we combine things that he, you know, will keep as separate. Or he breaks up ones that will, you know, keep us as whole. You know, whatever is the, wherever it starts, it doesn't really matter. Therefore, the Vedanta Sutra is also referred to as Sodashapada, or 16 divisions of aphorisms, right? So four chapters, or four parts. Each part, has a chapter, four chapters. So you end up with 16 chapters, or 16 padas. Right? So that's Sodashapada. Each part is divided into a number of topics or adhikaranas containing one or more sutras. Their purpose is to analyze the seemingly contradictory sentences of the Upanishads and ascertain their correct meaning. Okay, yeah, this will come up later. So you have this adhikarana. This will get into a little bit after, but an adhikarana means there's a point you're making. In other words, a thesis. So in one pada, there may be one, you know, two, three adhikaranas, but they have some kind of relationship with each other. Therefore, they're in that pada, not in another pada. So then that adhikarana, that will be presented according to the Panchanga Nyaya. Right? Does that make sense? At the same time as then that one connects with others, that those may be going in order, that they, all these adhikaranas are actually establishing like thesis, then another is another. So they're also going in this form. Does that make sense? The first section, so this is of the four. The first section is called Samanvayadhyaya. Since it attempts to harmonize, Samanvaya, harmony, the principles dealt with in the various Upanishads, right? Because there's so many points being made, they seem contradictory, so they're trying to bring all those together. What is actually the essential meanings that they're trying to make? The principles dealt with, the second is designated as avirodhadhyaya, applying itself to dispel any viroda or contradiction that may confront Vedanta philosophy. The first two sections thus discuss sambandha gyan, or knowledge of the relationship. The third section is called sadhanadhyaya, as it describes the process of devotional service, abhideya gyan. And the fourth is called phaladhyaya, describing the result of devotional service, prayojana gyan. Right? The analysis of the Gita will be in these four sections. And the first two will be, is, in other words, it's just following this. Like that. So with that in mind, look at the analysis. Does that make sense? You know? So in other words, harmonizing these doubts and then clearing the doubts. Like that. Function of nyayas or adhikaranas. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur explains the application of the adhikarana. Through the various Upanishadic mantras have apparently conflicting features, they are reconciled by the aphorisms of Sri Vyas in his Uttaramimamsa philosophy under different systematic logical categories, known as nyayas or adhikaranas. Each theme of an adhikarana has been fully dealt with by panchanga, or fivefold positions of the logical system to meet all opposing controversies. Sri Chaitanya's Teachings, page 174, published by Gaudiya Math, 1967. Okay, this is... in other words, the adhikarana we can see here is dealt with by panchanga. So there'll be a point being made, right? So in other words, the adhikarana is the point that you're making, but it will follow these five logical categories, right? Or fivefold positions of logical system. Does that make sense? In other words, the adhikarana is the point being made at the same time as that point is being made through panchanga nyaya. So the adhikarana can be called nyaya because the adhikarana's presentation is these five. Right? Does that make sense? In other words, having presented all these five together, that then you could say is the adhikarana. Because the point being made has to go through this process to come to its proper conclusion. Yes? No?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, here says logical categories known as nyayas or adhikaranas. Nyaya or adhikarana is the same thing.
Yeah, because it's an adhikarana is a point being made, topics, right? But that topic is presented through this five point logical system. So therefore, the five point logical system, the adhikarana, the same. So because it's using that logic, Adhikarana can also be called Nyaya. So you could say, in this Nyaya, this is being established. You know, or you'd say Adhikaranas. So most of the time we say Adhikaranas, but some people also call it Nyaya. So just that you're familiar with it, because it's an Adhikarana that is making a point, right? But at the same time, is it can be called Nyaya, because the way it makes the point is through the five divisions of logic. Yeah, well, I mean, you're using Nyaya, but here it's just what they're saying is that the Adhikarana is called Nyaya,
yeah,
simply because it uses that system. But Panchanga Nyaya on its own stands that is the method you want to present anything, because you'll take a theme. In other words, you're taking a topic, so technically that's an Adhikarana. You're taking a topic and you present it according to this. So in the Bhagavatam, in the Vedanta Sutra, they're called Adhikaranas. Right, the Basyas, they make this very clear, these are Adhikaranas. But in the Bhagavatam, it's not necessarily used as a term, but the same thing is going on. So you always have a point being made, and then there's this whole process, logical process to establish it. But that may be point in something bigger, where there's actually a longer drawn out process of the five going on. So this is just establishing the first part of it. Then the next thing establishes the second, and the next thing establishes the third. Does that make sense? Okay. Arrangement according to Panchanga Nyaya. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur further states, no subject matter can be confidentially accepted unless it passes through the five processes of logical or rational departments. Sri Chaitanya's teaching is page 184. So he says, technically we don't accept it as a properly presented subject matter if it's not presented according to these five. Right? That's his point. Because otherwise it won't be complete. You'll have made your point, but unless you back it up and do all these different things, it won't be complete. So the idea is by making it complete, then it's accepted and others will be able to accept it. For this reason, Panchanga Nyaya is known as Pararta Anuman, or method used for convincing others. The following verse, commonly found in the commentaries on Vedanta and Mimamsa Shastra, describes the fivefold elements that constitute the method of analysis of Vedic mantras. Quote, in a text, an Adhikarana refers to a topic which consists of five elements. The subject matter, wherein the Vedic mantra in question is presented. Doubts regarding the various possible meanings of the mantra, an opponent's interpretation of the meaning which is logically presented, an alternate viewpoint which points out the fallacies in the logic of the opponent, and ascertaining the final meaning of the mantra. Does that make sense? In other words, they're saying that in a text, so this is in general, any text, it has a topic. That topic is an Adhikarana. That Adhikarana is presented according to Panchanga Nyaya. It's not that maybe it is, or kinda it is, or it is, like that. So then, that means you make your point, and then you present your point, your thesis. You know, you're at the topic how you see it. Someone else has a doubt, right? They then explain their doubt, then you re-explain your thesis in a way that all their doubts are removed, and then you give your conclusion. Does that make sense? The five syllogistic aspects of an Adhikarana are known as Panchanga Nyaya. The terms commonly used in the scriptures for five syllogistic aspects of an Adhikarana are: 1. Vishaya, thesis, or pratigya, means the getting to. See, the first one is the one that's generally used when you're using nyaya to remove the doubt, meaning an opposing argument. The second set that's there, because you say it's this or that. You understand in this list? The second one, because we see Prabhupada will quote that one, means that will be according to your just logical presentation of the point without you're not having to argue with the person. But you're, you know, understanding that these doubts may be there, but you're presenting it yourself. So that means you'll have a very nice logical sequence that it will go through. While on the other one is that you're going to go through and then there's a doubt, you have to deal with the doubt and according to that and it'll go and then finally you'll be able to conclude it. Right? They're both the same thing, which we'll explain, but it's just slightly different. In other words, one is to those who are, you know, how you say, more favorable. One is for those who are not necessarily. In other words, one's for dealing with opponents, one's who are dealing with those who are submissive. It's the same method, like that. So I think the Vishraya, Shamshaya, Purva Paksha, this is Vedanta. This is how Vyas uses it. The Pratigya, Hetu, Udharahana, these are Gotama, means where the logical system comes from. Right? Does that make sense? Vishaya, thesis or pratigya. Shamshaya, doubt or hetu, reasons. So in other words, pratigya means you have your thesis, that gets a doubt. Or on the other, pratigya, you give your point, you give your reasons why. You understand? But at the same time, is because you've given your reasons why, that brings up the doubt. You know what I'm saying? Because let's say I say Krishna is God. That might, let's say if you're discussing in the Vedic forum, if I say Krishna is God, it doesn't really bring up so much of doubt. You know? Because, yes, he can be God, Rama is the main, and then he's expanded, or Vishnu is the main, and he's one of his expansions. Or Krishna is the main, and these other expansions. Or, yes, Krishna is God, you're God, I'm God, we're all God. You know, so it doesn't matter. You know, or yes, he's a god, he's like a demigod, he's the Lord of the mode of goodness, so he's a god. So yes, you know, but there's so many other gods also. So there's no problem with the thesis. Then when I give reasons, you know, he is the origin of everything, he's asamurdva, you know, no one is equal to him, no one is above him. Then I get the doubt, well, hey, wait a minute, you know, Shiva is supreme, or no, Vishnu is supreme, or, you know, no, Brahman is supreme, you know what I'm saying? So, therefore, means the two go together. It's just a matter of how prominent the doubt has to be dealt with, basically. On what terms, you know? Does that make sense? So, if it's actually you're having a debate, you're going to be using the first form of it. Mm-hmm. The second is always there, but it'll take more of that feature. If it's not a debate, you're making a presentation, then you use the second line.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Purva Paksha, then their thesis comes up. And, you know, all their things. Then we give our examples. So our examples support our reasons. Same time, these examples cut their thesis. Does that make sense? Then we have uttaram, alternate viewpoint, or upanaya, further explanation. So, therefore, they've given their thesis, and then they give their alternate points. But then you're giving further explanations that actually bring everything together. Then nirnaya, synthesis, or correct collusion, or siddhanta. So, in other words, you've given, means now they've given their alternate viewpoint, now you synthesize it and bring it to its complete conclusion. Right? Does that make sense? You made your point, they rose a doubt. From the doubt, then they give their examples why they think they're correct. Then you give an alternate viewpoint, in other words, your explanation, and then you synthesize, you know, the points that they made into yours, and then give the conclusion. Right? So that's if it's an argument, right? A debate. The other then, you're making your point, you're giving your reasons behind it, you're giving your examples like that, then you're giving further finer explanations that brings the whole things together, and then, you know, so that you've come to the conclusion, then you give the quotations from scriptures that connect it, you know, to other things, like you see in Gita purports, then like that. come for a class now, or? Oh, no, we're reading this really nice paper here. It's like that some guy wrote on this Panchanga Nyaya. You know, you might be interested. It's really, really nice.
If you're presenting something logically, why do the supporting quotations come at the very end? Wouldn't they be appropriate?
Because it'll come out later what that exactly means. At the bottom of the page, you see various types of sangati. Like that, because that means it's just like in the Bhagavatam. I mean, in the Bhagavatam, the verses are supporting verses are all from Gita or Chaitanya Charitamrita, right? From the Gita, it's from Bhagavatam.
Right.
So you're showing the connection with this scripture to that one. In other words, it's not just an isolated thing that you're saying this. You know, this point is being made in all the scriptures,
mm-hmm.
right? You know, so connection must be shown,
mm-hmm.
like that.
So, what's the connection between Gautama and Jaimini?
Jaimini is Purva Mimamsa.
Mm-hmm.
That's not Nyaya.
Oh, okay.
See, it's Panchanga Nyaya. You have the Paryalingas. That's the next lesson.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's on these six forms of understanding what's in the Vedic literature. So, because the Purva Mimamsa is very ritualistic, then they rely heavily on all these different Vedic formulas just to make anything work, because they themselves don't necessarily come to realization. They just perform the activities to get a result.
Mm-hmm.
So they're very strict in following these Vedic formulas. So because he uses it so clearly and all that, it's commonly known as, you know, Jaimini's Mimamsa, but technically it's called Tatparyalingas.
Mm.
Like that. So everybody uses it. Just somehow or another he's made it more prominent.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay, so then here we see is that these two lines run together, you know, of logic. But just one is that, you know, it's like you've given your reasons, examples, further explanations, and connection to other scriptures. Like that. The other one is then he's given his point, raised his doubt. When we've given our point, he raised his doubt. He gives his examples and explanations. Then we give ours, and in that conclude it, and then bring it to our final conclusion that we want to do. But it's not that one is, exclusive of the other. One line is exclusive. Like Prabhupada will be using one. Then he'll say, some may say. That's the doubt.
Yes.
Then he'll clear the doubt and come to the conclusion. And he'll also do that. So it's like they're all the same thing. It's just a slightly different view on what it is you're trying to accomplish. In other words, both of these can do. Your thesis is clear. So you can give your doubt. You can raise the doubt. You can give your reasons. Or you can do your reasons and therefore raise the doubt.
Mm-hmm.
Right, then the doubt comes up, they're going to give their explanation. You know, at the same time, you're going to give your examples, you know, to clear that. Right, then there'll be an alternate viewpoint, which is ours, and further explanations of it. You've already given examples, now the further explanations, those are going to bring about the conclusion of their point. Right, then the synthesis, you know, you bring theirs into yours. In other words, you show how your viewpoint is bigger than theirs. Theirs is just an aspect, but they're trying to make that seem like the whole thing. Therefore, it is defective in that way. So their point, you know, is synthesized into yours. You know, like Bhaktivinoda Thakur was saying, no thought's wrong. It's just a matter of how far it's taken or from what angle it's taken. So you simply change the perspective on their point. Then it becomes part of yours. Right? Does that make sense? Because there's only a fight if there's two. If their thesis is in yours, where's the fight? Right? So you've absorbed theirs into it. And then you give you've absorbed it, you've given the final conclusion, and you give the connection to the other scriptures, or within itself and all that. Okay? Yeah? And Adhikarana, or topic, is also called Nyaya. Okay, we said that. A philosophical work should present both the Purvapaksha and Siddhanta. In the Purvapaksha, the point of view to be refuted is dealt with. To refute an opposing opinion, one has naturally to state it. This is the purpose of the Purvapaksha. In the Siddhanta section, there is refutation of the opposing system before establishing the conclusion. So in other words, he's saying the Siddhanta includes refuting it and establishing. So in the other one is that in the further explanations, that's where then you can bring it together. But otherwise, it goes through these things, these five. Does that make sense? These stages are there. So when you say Siddhanta, it means you've done the synthesis. You're going to, you know, bring it around, synthesize it, then give a conclusion, right? But the synthesis is more universal because some people don't like to give a conclusion, right? The modern academics stay away from conclusions because then that's the way it is, and then there isn't another alternative. They don't like that. They want to keep the door open. So therefore, they'll just say thesis, antithesis, and synthesis. Right? But, so they're giving it simply in three, but these three actually have five parts. There's actually five, but it's just they've brought the other parts into there. So thesis will also be, you know, the thesis and its reasons, you know, and your examples. They'll bring it all as, that's your thesis. Well, we have it as three different things. You know what I'm saying? And the antithesis, that'll be there, okay. Synthesis will also include how you've absorbed theirs into yours. That's synthesis, that they'll agree. But then you've given a conclusion and connection to other things that they don't necessarily do. Does that make sense? So in other words, logic is basically logic, like math is math. It's just a matter of how far they take it. In the Jaimini Sutras, there's a topic which... In the Jaimini Sutras, there's a topic which illustrates the systematic analytical approach for the following Vedic mantra. Varshasu ratakaroginadhatita. In the rainy season, a ratakara ought to establish a sacred fire. In this mantra, the true meaning of the word ratakara needs to be ascertained. Using the method of analysis as described, a systematic analysis of the mantra is carried out, and the true meaning of the word ratakara is established. The fivefold analysis is described below. 1. Vishaya, the subject matter. This refers to the Vedic mantra in question being addressed in the Jaimini Sutras, 6144 to 6150, in the topic name Ratakara Adhikarna. Vishaya doubt. This refers to the doubt regarding the correct meaning of ratakara. Ratakara can be understood etymologically as a chariot maker, belonging to one of the varnas, Brahman, Kshatriya, and Vaishya, or conventionally as a person born in an intercaste marriage. Right? Because a charioteer generally is someone who is of mixed caste marriage. Like that. Purvapaksha. Objections. This refers to the opponent's viewpoint ascertaining the meaning etymologically as a chariot maker belonging to one of the three varnas. Right? In other words, he says, I have a doubt about, you know, this meaning a chariot, you know, someone who drives, you know, a chariot maker, you know, and this is my reason. Does that make sense? So in other words, what happens is basically the five things are there. They just become, except for the first, kind of moved. Because what you're doing here then comes down in here and it moves like that. But at the end, then it becomes synthesized again. You know, so it works out. It's just a matter of, if you want to bring out these others, then it goes through this form. If you don't need to, they become condensed. So their doubt and their reasons, if we're making the presentation, they're not sitting there, then we would generally put that into one thing. Mm-hmm. You know, the doubt means their reasons also. You know, but in the other one, then they take our thesis to also include our reasons. You know what I'm saying? So it's just a matter of putting something together, taking it apart. But the same elements are there. You're going to make your point, you're going to give your reasons, you're going to give your examples, you're going to give your conclusion, you're going to give your connection to why this is important, connects to other things. Right? Uttara, reply to the objections. This refers to the arguments pointing out the fallacies of the opponent's viewpoint. One principal argument is that the conventional meaning is stronger than the etymological meaning, since the former is at once perceived, while the latter is derived from its constituent members. This being so, the conventional meaning overrides the etymological meaning. Nirnaya, conclusion. This ascertains the conventional meaning of Ratakara is intended in the mantra. Thus, the Vedic mantra under discussion enjoins the sacred fire to a person born of an intercaste marriage. Right? Does that make sense? So, in other words, you go through this, then you know the point has been presented. Right? So that's what the Panchanga Nyaya is for. So, concluding this, and then we'll finish for the day. Srila Prabhupada practically explains the usage of Panchanga Nyaya in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. Quote, every theme must necessarily be explained with reference to pratigya, or solemn declaration of the purpose of the treatise. The solemn declaration given in the beginning of the Vedanta Sutra is the Tato Brahma Jigyasa, which means that this book was written with a solemn declaration to inquire about the absolute truth. Similarly, reasons must be expressed, hetu, examples must be given in terms of various facts, udaharana, the theme must be gradually brought nearer for understanding, upayana, and finally it must be supported by authoritative quotations from the Vedic Shastras, nigaman. This is Adi Lila 7106 purport, same purport. Understand? So we see here in all these stages that there's been quotations of Prabhupada on it, so it's standard. Everything must be necessarily explained with reference to, and he goes through the Panchanga Nyaya. Every theme, so that's an Adhikarana. Right? So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur has said, this is how we explain and accept things, is authoritative. And Srila Prabhupada has said the same thing. Right? So it's not, this is some weirdo, you know, Vedic thing. This is a standard thing used by our Sampradaya. Okay, so now, then tomorrow? No, Thursday. Then we'll continue with the various types of sangati. Right? And that will basically then conclude. Then Friday, then we'll start the next lesson. Right, so that'll be the Tatparyalingas. Then understanding that, then we'll go into actual study of, you know, the history of, you know, philosophy and religion. Okay?
Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Srila Prabhupada ki
Jai
Samavita Bhakti Vrinda ki
Jai
Nitai Gaura
Vrinda ki
Aristotle, someone else had one of the communist guys, I think Tolstoy or something.
Leonardo da Vinci.
Leonardo da Vinci, okay.
Aristotle.
Very intellectual.
Intellectual club. Intellectual club.
Yeah, okay. It's the official intellectual club notebook. Russian. Right. Cool.